main aim is to completely dismantle the foundations of an independent Muslim community.
At the time of this episode's release, the outcome of the French presidential election has yet to be announced. It is likely the incumbent Emmanuel Macron will come back to office, once again defeating his hard-right rival, Marine Le Pen. Many Muslims may breathe a sigh of relief. Le Pen stands out as a viscerally anti-Muslim candidate in a country where it's hard to find any moderate voices. But in many ways, Macron's return to power is meaningless for the Muslim community in France. For all the calls of greater political participation, the choice for many is between one form of Islamophobia over another. Today, my guest, Rayan Freshki, a legal expert and researcher for Cage UK, has recently authored a disturbing report on the French government's policy of systematic obstruction of the Muslim community. He uncovers how the French state under Macron has targeted peaceful Muslims, shut down mosques, closed charities, hounded Islamic schools, and made it impossible for civil society to operate independently from the state. His report, found in the show notes, makes a chilling read. Rayan tells me that the French state is shutting down Islam in France. We talk about how this systematic obstruction of Macron has manifested and the consequence for Europe's largest Muslim community. Now, Rayan, it's great to have you with us. And I've been reading through your report that you published for Cage UK, and I advise all my listeners to read the findings of your report, because I think it makes a chilling read. But I want to start, before we talk about systematic obstruction, I think this is what you call the French policy towards the Muslim community. I want to first ask about why. Why is the French state so harsh against Muslims in France? I mean, you know, from the outside, the impression we get is that the French state observes a politicization of the Muslim community. Muslims in France want to live separate lives. Muslims are calling for, I don't know, some form of Sharia in their public life. Muslims are disobedient to the laws of French society. I mean, the impression we get is that there is there's something going on in the Muslim community that the French state is trying to react to. What are the demands of the Muslims in France that have provoked the French state to act in the way it has?
The specific demands that you are highlighting do not really exist. Like, there's no political party, there's no Muslim political party, or even outside of a political party, there's no shared and generic demand from Muslims according to which Sharia should be implemented in the entire territory, or that kind of stuff. That doesn't even exist. The point is, again, Islamism is nothing to the eyes of the state and to the eyes of basically the entire political spectrum, is nothing but the orthodox practice of Islam. So it becomes the argument that they're going to use is, well, hijab is, you're wearing hijab because of your faith, right? Okay, fair. And hijabs can be seen in the public sphere. So because it's in the public sphere, it's political, meaning that hijab is political, so it's a form of political Islam. So that's the link that they are basically establishing. And this is how political Islam in the end, or Islamism, only describes the normal practice of basic Islamic beliefs. I mean, we're not even talking about very deep stuff. This is just a very common Islamic practice. We can talk about hijab, but prayer as well. They went as far as identifying a deeper religious practice during Ramadan as a form of radicalization, a weak signal of radicalization. So it's very clear that they're basically targeting Islam. These kind of demands do not, these kind of political demands do not exist in the community, because even though we were mentioning that our understanding of the deen has deepened, it's not that deep. It's not still that shared. We still are a community that is very much secularized, maybe the most secularized Muslim community in the West. And by the way, even if you're not secularized, I'm not sure there's any point in demanding the implementation of Sharia to people who are not Muslim, by the way. This is not how, this is not what Islam commands.
That's very interesting. So it's really just day-to-day Islamic practice, which is now, which is regarded as being signs of political Islam or Islamism. And that's what the French state is trying to snuff out, trying to eradicate, right? So let's talk about what the French state has been up to in the last few years. Now, we hear little bits of information from time to time. You know, we hear about the closure of mosques. We hear about the stipulation that children need to be put onto a register, and home education is almost impossible now to achieve. We hear about Muslim organizations and charities that have been shut down. But I suppose we hear about this from time to time. Maybe it comes up on our social media feed. But can you bring it together? What's happened to the Muslim community in France over the last few years?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Ahri, for bringing that up, because this is the main point of the report. The main point of the report is to highlight how these different events, the closure of the mosque, adoption of the anti-separatism law, the one which basically made house education almost impossible for Muslims, actually impossible for Muslims, the closure of Baraka City, a charity, the closure of the CCIF, which was an independent Muslim human rights organization, they are not independent events. They are actually connected to each other. And the link is the systematic obstruction policy, this official policy that was started by the French state, by the French government in February 2018. This is absolutely essential to understand. It's a system, it's a policy that has been willfully created, crafted, and established by the government. And actually, what's kind of shocking is that it started in February 2018 at the request of Emmanuel Macron, and it remained completely secret until November 2019. So basically for a year and a half, the state is running a policy, an official policy with very specific guidelines for a year and a half, and it's completely secret. No one knows a thing about it. You discover that in November 2019. And what you discover is that the policy has been established in 15 areas. We don't know which one, by the way. To this day, we still don't know which areas. And we know that thousands of inspections, thousands of controls have been led. Closures have been announced. Millions of euros have been seized. And you discover that now they believe that the policy is quite efficient and that it's going to be implemented in the entire national territory. So after a year and a half of being completely secret, it becomes public, and that's when you realize that it's going to be implemented everywhere.
And what's the aim of this systematic obstruction policy?
The policy main aim is to completely dismantle the foundations of an independent Muslim community. So how do you do that? You forcefully close down mosques, Islamic schools, but also businesses that are run by Muslims. When I say businesses, I mean restaurants, kebab, whatever, anything that is run by a Muslim. You're going to seize some money. You're going to organize controls, I mean inspections of mosques, Islamic schools, businesses, and so on, because you want to harass the community. So even though you can't, if for some reason you don't find some minor legal transgression that could lead to a closure, at the very least, you are psychologically harassing and indeed persecuting the entire community to make sure that they understand that they are not welcomed and that they are not going to be able to establish themselves as an autonomous and independent and prosperous Muslim communities. That's just not possible. And the numbers are quite shocking. We're talking about almost 25,000 controls in the last 4 years. We're talking about more than 700 closures in the last 4 years. And we're talking about 46 million euros that were seized, actually, I should say, stolen, extorted by the state.
But on what pretext? I mean, you're confiscating money from Muslim businesses and closing down Muslim businesses. What law provides that level of power to the state to just randomly to arbitrarily close down these businesses?
What's interesting is that, and that's one of the key points of the systematic obstruction policy. It doesn't exclusively rely on anti-terror laws, right? Because it's something very specific. It's difficult to implement. It's difficult to apply. We were mentioning the fact that in 2019, we discovered the existence of the policy. And when we discovered it, the functioning, the mechanics of the policy were also unveiled. And this is when the late Minister of the Interior, Castaner, said all options are to be used in order to close down or harass these organizations, these businesses, and so on and so forth. Meaning any kind of legislation can be used in order to justify a closure. Meaning it's basically it's a form of Al Capone governance, meaning
get them by any means.
By any means, exactly. Right. The anti-terror system is too specific; it's very difficult to implement. But you can use, I don't know, security norms. You can use that as well. You can use hygiene norms as well. Let's use that. If you see the slightest transgression, which normally is not met with a closure, by the way. But if you see the slightest infringement, you can close down basically anything. And that's what's happening right now.
So schools have been shut down. I mean, give me an example of a transgression that led to the closure of a school, for example.
For example, a school, I recall a school, a high school in Paris, and it was in a building, in a venue, and the building actually hosted different organizations. There was a Muslim organization and other organizations that were not Muslim. And there's that school, and there's a control. 15 administrative controllers come to the school, and they identify that there may be a transgression on security norms. And I can't recall specifically which one of it was. But basically, the idea was the venue is, the building is hosting different organizations. So if there's a transgression of that specific norm, then all organizations should be actually sanctioned. But the only one who was sanctioned was the Muslim high school, which was not only closed down, but actually had to leave the building. And the very same building hosted a few months after a Jewish school. And no work. I mean, if there was a transgression, really, then no other school could have been opened, right? But that still happened, because the main point was to make sure that the Muslim school could basically leave the building.
That's interesting. So this systematic obstruction policy was first. Developed by the government in 2018, and over a number of years, they rolled out this. I mean, the figures you cite are just extraordinary in terms of closures and amount of money that have been confiscated. Isn't there a recourse to law here? I mean, surely, you know, if the state overreaches, there are processes and procedures, you know, judicial review processes where one can question the state and remedy that error. Has that been tried by the Muslim community?
It was tried, especially when some organizations were dissolved. But the thing is, because it's, again, because of the Islamophobic consensus, because even some key the key Supreme Court in France, the Conseil d'État, actually validated every dissolution with no issues. And they even said, they even stated back in 2018 that laïcité should be reformed, should be even more stringent because, and I'm quoting them, the law of 1905, which is the first law on laïcité, did not, is basically could not be applied anymore because the social issues that France was facing in 1905 are not the same issues that we that they are facing right now. Basically, 1905, no Muslims in the French metropolitan area. But now, but nowadays, there are some, they are practicing. So they believe that laïcité should be reformed. And in the end, the reform was nothing but the anti-separatism law. So the basically, the administrative Supreme Court in France actually believes and adopts the same narrative as the state in the end. So that says a lot about the fact that even though I believe that obviously we should try our best to protect our rights in courts, it's very unlikely that this route is going to be efficient, very unlikely.
And tell me about, you mentioned two organizations, very big organizations, Baraka City and CCIF, and they were shut down in late 2020, I believe. What was behind the closure of these organizations? Why did the state go to that level?
Well, what actually triggered the dissolutions and such a radical stance from the state, according to them, is the murder of Samuel Paty, who was a professor who was killed in late 2020 because he showed some blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So right after that event, let's say that the state adopted a stance that was even more radical. And that actually, they used that event in order to justify the closure of the CCIF. And even if the legal justifications were quite different, that's basically what they used in order to justify the closure of Baraka City as well. Again, there were no connections between the murder and these organizations, obviously, but it was just a way for them to, again, explain that from Islamism to violence, there is a direct connection. So the CCIF, Baraka City, we're talking about practicing Muslims, Muslims who try to influence the social sphere of life, even if it's in a different kind of way, but they are still trying to influence social French life because of their faith. Well, that's called Islamism, and Islamism, in the end, at some point, is going to lead to some form of violence. So they should be shut down. It's a form of, it's basically prevent, but in a way more, in an even more radical way. So that's how they justified the dissolutions.
And you mentioned the anti-separatism law, which is now, I think in 21, it became law in France. Can you explain this law to us and why the French government, I mean, you know, since 2018, as you've described, they've had the ability to close down, to systematically obstruct Muslim groups. So why this additional law, the anti-separatism law, which we all now know about in very general terms, but if you can explain the details of it.
The main point is that the anti-separatism law, as you mentioned, was adopted in 2021. The systematic obstruction was established and was being implemented since 2018. And the main idea, as we said, is that you can use any kind of legislation, anything that allows you to justify your control and inspection, and in the end, a closure can be used. So the main point of the anti-separatism law is to actually make sure that the administration basically has even more powers, even more tools. And when I say more, I really mean from a purely numerical standpoint. How can I justify to control a school, for example? Well, before the anti-separatism law, you may have, let's say, five different legal dispositions that should be met by the school. After the separatism law, it's not five anymore, it's seven. So I can go into the details of it, but it's not even the point. The main point is to make sure that now the administration has even more tools, even more actually weapons in order to close down these institutions. Because the main point is that the entire legislation has been weaponized by the state. It's actually a weapon that they're going to use arbitrarily in order to make sure that that they're going to meet their goals. And the goals are the controls, the closures, and the euros that they're trying to seize. So that's the main thing about the anti-separatism law. And that I believe, is the overarching spirit of any kind of legal reform that the state is going to adopt from now on, when obviously legal reforms that have some kind of influence on Muslim human rights. The main point is to make sure that we have more weapons. And what's actually terrifying is, I recall that the day it was voted, a deputy, basically a member of parliament, actually said, well, I'm going to vote for the adoption of the anti-separatism law, but I still believe that it's not enough and that at some point we'll have to adopt another law, because I really believe that's not enough. And we're talking about a law that introduced 102 new legal dispositions. So it's actually a huge bill. It really is a huge one. But it's still not enough. And I'm laughing, but it really says a lot about the complete blindness, the complete, it's just amazing to see that not only do they completely refuse to engage with us and discuss with us, but it's just complete, direct, full spectrum attack on us. And even when that happens, it may not be enough. So because it's not enough, let's continue again. And this is why sometimes commentators exclusively focus on this anti-separatism law. I do believe that they should focus on the systematic obstruction, because in the end, the anti-separatism law is just yet another tool, a tool that is implemented in that policy, basically.
I want to understand the motivations of the French state. Why has Emmanuel Macron and the French political establishment decided to embark on this very horrid program of obstructing the Muslim community in the most basic aspects of their religious observance? You mentioned a lot in your report. You give statements from, for example, the Interior Minister, very explicitly stating that we are now spreading terror. The subtext seems to be that the government wants to establish fear in the Muslim community. To what end? Why are they trying to make Muslims fearful?
I think there are two layers, two potential explanations. The first one is, because Islamism, in the end, and they know that as well, Islamism is nothing but Islamic practice. What they believe is that there is a direct connection between Orthodox Islam and violence. So we want to avoid violence, meaning we need to erase Islamic beliefs, Islamic practices as much as possible. Or if we can't erase them, if you keep them, then you're going to fear us so much that you're not going to practice them to the full extent, right? So that's the first kind of explanation. The second one is more, let's say, political. I believe that because the far right became a political force in the country, I do believe that Macron is also trying to seduce or at the very least reassure some, basically the far right, basically saying, you may not vote for me, but listen, I'm not that moderate. I'm not that bad. I'm still doing the job when we're talking about Muslims. I'm still making basically what you would like to do. So do not oppose me as much as you would like to, because in the end, I may be moderate with others, but with them, I'm extremely harsh. So I do believe that he is trying to seduce some of them. And I also think that in the end, even outside of the official far-right parties, again, the consensus is so wide that we were mentioning a member of parliament that's coming from the center and that believes that the anti-Semitism law is not enough. So in the end, it's not just about trying to seduce. It's just the way they are. They really believe that there is a problem with Islam and Muslims, which should be tackled and addressed very harshly, very radically, because, again, in their mind, Islam, and I'm quoting Macron, is a religion in crisis. So it's a religion that should be, they should engage with our religion in a very deep and, in the end, very radical way.
Brother Rayan, do you feel that the French state is attempting to create a level of fear in the Muslim community to such a degree that it solicits a reform from within? The Muslim community recognize that in order to live your life and achieve one's interests, Islam is going to have to be reformed, pragmatically reformed, in order to be accommodated by the French state. Is the intention, in other words, to create an internal reformation within the French Muslim community and their perspective on Islam?
I think this is an intention. I think that when Macron said Islam is in crisis, he was actually talking about the necessity of some kind of reform, paralleling basically the reform Christianism went through in the last centuries. Now, I'm not sure it's going to trigger such a, I mean, it's not going to trigger such reform, because as we know, it's structurally impossible to reform. But for certain, it's going to push some of them to completely assimilate. That's something that is going to happen. Some of us, even though they're going to maintain their beliefs, they're going to, I was about to say, dissolve some of their practices at some point, because that's the only way you can avoid basically social death. I mean, the thing is, okay, we're talking about the systematic obstruction, but if you put that aside, we also need to take into account cultural Islamophobia that leads so many of us who have diplomas, who have, mashallah, great competences, which actually avoid them from getting some jobs, basically. So there's also that kind of the discrimination phenomenon, which is not directly connected to a state-led policy, is still very much prevalent in French society. So at some point, you're basically, if you adopt and implement and practice Islam to the full extent, it's very clear that you may face at some point a form of social death. So the equation is quite radical. So what are you going to do? It's kind of it's almost like a challenge. It's like, fine, you want to remain who you are, okay, good, but there's no place for you in society whatsoever.
So what are the majority of Muslims doing? As you've quite rightly said, the majority of Muslims are not going to accept this bargain to assimilate to such a degree that they renounce aspects of Islamic practice. So what then is the response of the Muslim community? How are they managing this state-sponsored systematic obstruction campaign?
Those who can are trying to leave the country.
Really?
And that's actually happening. There's a great piece that was published by the New York Times a few weeks ago that highlights that that phenomena. And this is something that is going to happen, and I believe this is going to actually intensify in the near future, because as
leave to where
of Muslim majority countries like Turkey, for example, Algeria also for a lot of us, basically North African countries, some of us are also leaving to the UK, Canada as well. That's basically the main countries that come to our mind. This is the first kind of reaction, people leaving. If there's no place for you here, then just leave. But for others, the situation is way more, I don't want to say hopeless, but if you can't leave, then and you still want to maintain your deen, then you have to face some kind of precarity, you're going to face discrimination, you're going to face the social death, or at the very least, some kind of social invisibility in the current society. This really isn't a, obviously it's unfair, it's a form of zone, obviously, but what really worries me is the fact that a community, let alone an individual, that is constantly targeted, that even when he doesn't move, he is criticized, then at some point you're triggering a reaction that is way more radical, because if any of my moves is bad and I shouldn't do it, then, well, you know what, I don't have anything to lose, right? So maybe violence could be an answer, because anyways, even when I'm trying to be peaceful, even when I'm trying to be, let's say, quote unquote, moderate, I don't like that wording, but you get the sense of what I'm trying to say, it's not working. Well, maybe something else is going to work there. If we can't discuss, then maybe there's another kind of relationship, another kind of dynamic that could work. And that's basically violence. So a phenomena that we do not sufficiently analyze is the fact that France is the European country that gave the more Islamic State soldiers, actually. We should ask ourselves the question, how is that possible? And the differential between the people who left from France with other European nations is actually massive. It's huge. How do we explain such a difference? So basically, what I'm trying to highlight here is the fact that if we continue on this route, the cycle of violence is not going to stop for sure. Is not going to stop for sure. And more violence is going to lead to even more Islamophobia, even more Islamophobic resentment, which is going to lead to even more Islamophobic policies, which are already absolutely radical, which is going to lead to even more violence at some point. So obviously we hope it's not going to happen, but the key ingredients are there.
I wonder if you can give me any insights into Emmanuel Macron and his state of mind or his way of thinking when it comes to Islam. We've known for some time that even on the international stage, Macron has talked a lot about fighting Islamic extremism the world over, even when the Americans have somewhat moved on. Of course, 9/11 happened in America, but the current American administration is now focused on great powers, Russia, China in particular. And there is a movement away from fighting terror. We saw that in the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Yet Macron has been insistent that this is the problem. And actually, at one stage, of course, now he will hate to recognize this, but at one stage he was calling to bring Russia in so that the global alliance against so-called Islamic terrorism would be comprehensive. So what's going on there? Why is Macron so obsessed?
Sure. It's important to understand here the strategical position of France, internationally speaking. So the key challenge that France is facing internationally speaking, is what they label as, what they officially label as the strategical downgrade, meaning basically in various simple words, they're not as powerful and mighty as they were before. They're not as influential from a purely strategical standpoint as they were right after World War II, basically. And that influence has slightly decreased because obviously of the end of colonialism. But even though colonialism ended, it's obvious that France still has a very strong political influence over the majority of its colonies, basically. So I'm of Algerian descent, and we're very proud. But it's kind of obvious that Algeria is still very much influenced by French policies. I could talk about Algeria, we could talk about Tunisia as well, we could talk about the Sahel region as well, we could talk about Mali and so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. It's very clear that basically the colonies, the Muslim colonies, even though they are still influenced by France, are more and more independent. France has been is strongly opposing, for example, the Turkish state led by Erdogan, because the Turkish state is more and more independent, right? And this is something that they, that is directly decreasing their influence internationally speaking. So more, let's say, independence from Muslim societies, from the ex-colonies, is actually more and more, or actually less and less power, less and less influence for them. So this is why I believe they are trying to focus their attention on the Muslim world. Basically, that's the Muslim world we're talking about, because they're trying to, they have very strong connections with Egypt as well. They are very much backing al-Sisi against Morsi in 2013, and that's just their official political and strategical stance. If we want to remain basically relevant and powerful, we cannot afford an independent and powerful Muslim world. That cannot happen. They're not as strong as the US, who may not have the same kind of obsessional focus on the Muslim world, even though they have. But France is not as mighty and as powerful. So if the Muslim world truly becomes independent, and we know what it means, then France is just is not a mighty nation, is not a supreme nation. It's a European nation, just like Italy, just like Spain. It doesn't have it doesn't have any more, and won't have any more, such a strong world over the destiny of the world.
Basically. And turning to the domestic political situation, elections are coming up, and we hear a lot about Marine Le Pen. But of course, Eric Zemmour has now become a viral story on the internet. He's vying for that right-leaning vote in France, which seems to be a very substantial vote in French politics. Now, I know that the electoral system is somewhat different to, you know, the British electoral system or even the American system. So how likely is it that someone like Eric Zemmour or Marine Le Pen, who, of course, in grades, you know, they are all Islamophobic, but these, you know, these individuals would be far more vociferous in even the very few things that the French state allow. For example, I understand that Eric Zemmour has talked about banning the hijab in the streets. How likely is it that candidates like these would break through and form the presidency?
Well, for the current, the presidential election that is coming up, I don't see someone like Zemmour or Le Pen winning in the end, because if you add up, as you mentioned clearly, the far right electorate is quite huge. We're basically talking about 30% of the electorate. And if you add to that specific electorate, the right-leaning, classical right-leaning, who are still very much Islamophobic, you basically, you were basically talking about 40, maybe 45% of the electorate. So I don't see them winning this year, but we obviously need to take into consideration the fact that I do believe that the main ideas of Zemmour are still being implemented under Macron policies. So the fact that we are a civilizational threat, a security threat to the nation, the fact that Islam in the end is going to lead to some kind of violence and insurrection. This is something that is being tackled by the systematic obstruction policy established by Macron. So this is something that we should bear in mind. And however, I also believe that Islamophobia is going to deepen, I believe, in the years that are coming because of so many factors. Because we are coming, because the pandemic is going to end. So there is an economical crisis. If there's an economical crisis, we know that one of the key consequences is more discrimination. So in France, it's going to mean more Islamophobia. So it means that we are even more the reason why France is not as powerful, mighty, and whatever. So in the next 5 years, I do believe that the resentment may very well deepen. And if it does, then the far-right electorate is going to be, may increase in the end. We need to take into consideration the fact that it's been basically 20 years of the war on terror. So those who were the generation that was nurtured by the narratives on Muslims and Islam, they're now going to vote. And if you look at some polls, if you look at basically that specific generation, those who were born in 2001, 2002, or even those who were born in the 90s, right? Those who were teenagers when the war on terror started, they're basically voting for the far right. The main party that is represented is the far right, is Marine Le Pen. And it's not surprising in the end, because you fostered an entire generation with resentment, with very strong Islamophobic narratives. So in the end, it's only natural that these people are going to promote and validate these kind of narratives.
You know, Macron is horrifying, but it's a horrifying thought to think that someone like Zemmour could take the presidency. And that tells you a lot about the domestic opinion, I think, in France and where it's moving. The direction of travel is moving in his and Marine Le Pen's direction rather than away from that, right? And we see that the left is losing ground in French electoral politics. I want to end by asking you a personal question, Rayan. I mean, you advocate for Muslims in France. You've written this report, and you know you've very very openly work to defend the Muslim community. But from your side, for you and your family, do you ever wonder whether France is your future and whether you should, you know, you should leave the country and like many Muslims in your generation who are moving to Turkey and or UAE or Dubai, whatever, right? Do you ever feel that you know, enough's enough from your side and it's now time to move on?
Yeah, that's obviously a question that I'm asking myself. When I was writing the report, the question arose in my mind basically each and every day. Because I was like, okay, if that's the situation, then at some point. But it's actually a very religious question in the end, because it's something that we should ask ourselves. The main point of our existence is to worship Allah Azza wa Jal. So that's the key point. Can you worship Allah Azza wa Jal? And if you are in a place where worshiping Allah Azza wa Jal is so difficult and is actually trying to hinder you in any way possible, then, I mean, France is not the earth, right? So at some point, you have to ask yourself the question. And I think, from a personal standpoint, I answered it. And I don't see France as my personal future. I'm not trying to, even though I wrote the report, I'm no scholar. I'm not, so I don't, this is my personal answer. I'm not trying to, I don't want to mislead an entire community telling them what they should do. I'm not a leader. I'm not a religious leader. I'm not a scholar. So this is a very, this is a personal answer that I have. But yeah, for sure. Because then the question is, it's okay, it's about me, but it's also about the future generations. So do I want, I don't have children, but if at some point I have some, do I want them, what am I going to do? Am I going to send them to a secular school where you can't pray, where you're not going to talk to, going to be taught about the deen, where they are basically all the mosques that are left are basically run by the state? Is it still a mosque? I can't send you to an Islamic school because they don't exist, or if they exist, they are basically being raided each and every week. Do I want that? So this is a key question that we are basically, that we have to ask ourselves all the time. And from my personal standpoint, yeah, I don't see my future, because again, at some point, we're trying to hold accountable the state for its crimes. But we also need to remind ourselves that we are going to be held accountable at some point when we're going to be resurrected. We're going to be asked some tough questions, and we better ask ourselves the tough questions right now and try to find the correct answer right now and not just avoid them. And then at some point, because at some point we'll have to answer. And it's better to answer right now than to answer in the next life, inshallah. So yeah.
Rayan, it's been a pleasure speaking to you today. May Allah make it easy for you and your family. Actually, maybe there is one last question. What can we do as Muslims beyond France, Muslims in a Muslim world? You know, we did see after the Samuel Paty killing and the atrocious statements of your president, we saw that around the world there was an outpouring of emotion against French policies towards the Muslim community. Even we had campaigns to remove French products from the shelves of many of the supermarkets and shops around the Muslim world. I think that was short-lived, and it didn't seem like it continued for longer. But is something like that a coherent answer to this problem from our sort of solidarity perspective?
Yeah, I do believe this to be a potential answer, a potential efficient answer, because I do believe that the state, the French state, is trying to promote a certain vision, right? They're trying to promote an idea that France is promoting and respecting human rights, that there's no issues with minorities, no systemic discrimination, no systemic Islamophobia, and so on and so forth. Why are they doing that? They're doing that because, again, because of the strategical downgrade. You cannot afford to have a bad reputation. You're already on the decline. But if now you also have a bad reputation, then for sure it's basically over. So you're going to face some boycotts. You're going to face difficult diplomatic relations with other key nations in the world. So you can't afford that. So the best way to actually, let's say, protect us is to make sure that their image should be the correct one. No, France is not a state that respects minorities. It's absolutely not a state that respects Muslim rights, for sure. It's a state that is officially Islamophobic, that is implementing official policies that are completely Islamophobic, and that actually only describe a proper Islamophobic persecution. The idea of the report is to make sure that people understand that it's so bad that it's actually a form of persecution. So if people understand that, then you'll have a correct understanding of the French picture. And once you have that, then for sure you can take a piece for political actions that are going to hold the state accountable. That's basically the only thing that could, in the end, I mean, international pressure that could in the end maybe trigger some kind of reform in France. That's my personal belief. I do believe that internally, domestically, there's some work to be done, but in the end, it's absolutely not, it's nearly not enough. We really need international pressure and international solidarity from the community. And that's basically something that is always, I mean, it's always the case. If you look at our history, that's not only something that comes from our principles. It's if you, I'm not going to quote the hadith from the Prophet ﷺ when he compared the entire ummah to a body, right? But everyone knows it. But then you actually have to implement it from a purely strategical standpoint. We still are one ummah. We're always going to be one ummah, whether they believe it or not, whether we feel it or not, we still are one ummah. And that actually means that in order to revive justice and divine justice, you have to not only show solidarity, that's great, obviously, but you also have to take some kind of steps, peaceful steps, you don't have to do some crazy stuff, in order to put some pressure. And you greatly reminded me of what happened right after the Samuel Paty murder and the cartoons and the blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet, we actually saw that France felt so insecure that the actual president, Macron, went to Al Jazeera in order to address that, because he understood that this is a key moment in history. We can't afford to have a bad reputation, because if that happens, the strategical downgrade is just basically happening and it's over for us. So the more we highlight what they're doing, the more, inshallah, we can hope for some change. Inshallah.
Jazakallah khair, Brother Rehan, for your time today.
Jazakallah khair. Thank you so much for your invitation.